So hello everybody. I think most of you have met me before, but my name is Matt Stewart. I'm the planning administrator for AMATS, and we have a couple other staff members here. Jeff and Heather, if you want to introduce yourselves.
Hi, Jeff
So
Gardner, AMATS.
Jeff and Heather are both planners on our staff, and so you'll notice a couple faces that are usually here from our staff that aren't here. Curtis isn't here today. He wasn't able to be here today. And then for those of you that know Dave Poulet, if you weren't already aware, he just retired this week. So he wanted to be particularly quiet about that. Dave, he's very like meek and doesn't like to make a big fuss about things. So he wanted to go out kind of quietly as much as I wanted to tell everyone a couple months ago that he'd be retiring. So definitely a well-deserved retirement and kind of a big loss for our staff to not have his knowledge and just his personality. He was a great person to work with. So anyway, we had a few things on our agenda today. And then of course we can have any discussion about any of these items or other items. But the first thing I wanted to talk about is our draft funding policy guidelines, which sounds like a very dry topic, but is actually an incredibly important topic. And I'm trying to share my screen, but oh, here we go. Okay. So I assume everybody can see that.
Yes.
Okay, great. And so I won't necessarily go through this whole thing, but if you have any questions along the way, let me know. We can definitely stop and slow down. I don't want to bore you with too many of the details, but did want to give you an overview of why we're doing this and why it's important. So our funding policy guidelines are something that gets updated every 2 years. They've always existed. They frame basically how and why we fund the projects that we do. These policy guidelines really shape our program. And if you've seen changes in our infrastructure over recent years, like this increased focus on multimodal improvements, like active transportation modes, that's because of what our funding policy guidelines say and how we fund those projects. So that's why it's so important. And as far as the process, this typically is done a couple of months, about 3 months before our committees make their final approval. In this case, we had a meeting in mid-June on June 20th with our TAC TIP subcommittee, and it was really kind of like a fairly lengthy work session where our staff shared all of the suggestions that we had. Now, those suggestions came about because of either internal conversations that we've been kicking around, always trying to improve our funding policy guidelines, but also comments we've received from some of our board members over the years of, just ideas on ways that we could make our funding more fair or be able to get more bang for our buck or whatever the case may be. So that's kind of where we are now. In our August meetings, we're like sharing this with our two committees, our technical advisor committee and the policy committee, as well as with all of you at the citizens committee. And then next month we'll be asking for our policy committee to approve them. So they're kind of I'm not going to really go too deep into just the general changes, unless you have any questions, but I did want to just show you a brief slide on that and then talk about some of the changes to our various funding programs and then talk about our new carbon reduction program. So, oops. So as far as our general things, really, like, I'm not going to read this whole list, but one of the key changes that you might be interested in, especially I know, some of you are with the task force and are particularly interested in bicycling and active transportation in general. So as you know, our Transportation Alternative Set-Aside program or TASA program is kind of our main mechanism to fund those types of projects. And so one of the changes we've made on that is we're extending our project delivery incentive program, or what we call PDIP, to that program. And so basically, it's a way that if communities have something they think they can deliver quickly, and if we have money left over in a fiscal year and we come knocking on their door and saying, hey, or if you're ready to go, you can take this money, then they can receive a little bit more federal funding, receive 90% instead of the standard 80%. So it's really just a mechanism to make to do more projects instead of losing that funding, sending it back to ODOT. So that's kind of one of the big ones there that I think might be of more interest. So now I was just going to talk briefly about our various programs that we have recommendations for. So STBG, you can think of that as kind of like our bread and butter. It's our very large funding source. It's a very general funding source, meaning like that it can that STBG funds can be used for a wide variety of projects. So currently, and what we're recommending for the future is that projects in the AMATS region, sponsors can receive up to $6 million. So that would stay the same, but there have been a few changes. One of them is the recently completed Safe Streets for All plan that we did. We're kind of trying to tie that in a little bit more. So thinking about crashes a little bit differently from instead of just being listed on our traffic crash reports, but talking more about whether something's on our high injury network from that plan. And so just as another way to incentivize safety a little bit more. Our resurfacing program is kind of a subset of STBG. It's money specifically set aside within STBG for our more minor projects, just general resurfacing of roadways. Really, the only change to that is that the funding cap went from $700,000 to $800,000. So a re relatively moderate change. Now, the TASA, which again, like I'm assuming some of you in the meeting here are particularly interested in this, we actually had some more substantive changes. The first of which is that we raised our funding cap by $300,000. From my understanding, 700,000 has been the funding cap for 2 decades or more. So just with inflationary pressures and just trying to get more bang for, like, 700,000 does not go very far. So we'd like to raise that to $1 million. But the probably the biggest change that we're making to any of our programs, and I think this is kind of hopefully kind of an exciting thing, is what we want to do is we're kind of calling it creating a reservoir. So we would be able to fund with TASA our STBG projects that exist, or any other funding sources. If we have a project that has some of those active transportation elements, and so I'll give an example. You have a roadway project being done, and there are sidewalks along that roadway that are being built. Even if all that funding was originally programmed toward STBG, sponsors could apply to be listed in our reservoir for this TASA so that if we have funding available that we're in danger of losing because it needs to be spent and we don't have projects in the pipeline that are ready to use it, we could then quickly apply TASA money toward completing those projects. So it's just a way to kind of make our STBG dollars go further, and it's a way to be a little bit more creative with our TASA funding. And so I guess the it's probably worth saying kind of the reason for this. A lot of our trail projects are larger projects, and as you know, they're very, very complex, especially when it comes to right of way, dealing with all of the red tape where it takes to get a project through. So doing we often have projects that end up having to move back a little bit because getting all of those ducks in a row is a very hard thing to do. So we're kind of like backfilling our TASA program with some the ability to have simpler projects if we're in danger of having that money go away. So really it's there's not a disadvantage. It's not disincentivizing our trail projects or anything like that. It's just a way to move to fund some other multimodal improvements. So does that make sense? I know that's kind of a confusing thing, but so that's probably our biggest change. We also have a couple of other minor changes you can see on the slide there. But overall, our most substantial changes are coming to our TASA program. But even those are relatively minor. Now, carbon reduction plan, that is a new funding source. This is money that has been available for a few years, but AMATS up until now did not have a way to, you know, we didn't have funding policy guidelines set up for this. So we have money accruing in this account for carbon reduction plan. So we finally put together some funding policy guidelines for this. So basically what we're trying to do is prioritize projects that reduce carbon emissions. We felt that it would make sense to emphasize projects that we already have on the books. And we also thought this would be a great place to insert some equity scoring criteria. This is, as you might know, this is like a major focus of the current federal administration. It's something that's pretty important to us within our agency and then just in general. So we thought this would be a great way to kind of test out how we can have equity as a direct component on projects receiving money. So this is kind of what our scoring criteria looks like for carbon reduction program. Don't need to like understand all of it, but generally like this is going toward roundabouts, other traffic flow improvements. So that could be two-way left turn lanes, signal optimization, but it's also can also be used toward alternative fuel bus purchases or bicycle and pedestrian improvements. So that's pretty much in a nutshell what's going on with our funding policy guidelines. These are estimates of what we expect to have available. $15 million for the STBG, the main STBG program, and then another $15 million for resurfacing, $8 million for CRP, and $1.2 million for TASA. Part of the reason that TASA is that low is we're a bit overprogrammed. And I'm not an expert. I don't know, Jeff, if you even have details on that, what years, I want to say it's like fiscal year 2025. We just have a lot going on in a few of those years. So that's why our kind of remaining balance is sort of low. And again, timeline, we expect that our committee will approve these funding guidelines next month. And then shortly after that, we'll make applications available for our communities and agencies for funding in September. And then they would be due around Halloween time. So I know that might be a little bit dry, but again, it's like pretty important stuff. So are there any questions about the funding policy guidelines?
Matt, I do have a couple of questions. Sure. One is, at this stage, is it likely there will be any changes to the funding policy guidelines before it's approved? Or like in your experience, do we expect that this will go through as it's been drafted?
Well, that's a good question. So first of all, in my experience, I can't really say because this is my first time going through AMATS funding rounds. I do know in the past, talking with Curtis and other staff, there have been some surprises in the past where like someone will bring something up. I would say there are decent odds that some of our members will really dive in and ask a few questions and make a few suggestions. I don't anticipate that any of the changes would be significant, but it is possible.
Thank you. One other question I had, I think I saw on the TASA scoring that Safe Routes to School plans got some.
And I'm a little rusty on that. You know what? I can't remember. I think I definitely remember talking about that, but I don't remember the details of what changed. I'm going to see if I can, in my notes, if I can look that up.
Yeah, I think it's right down there at the bottom. Increase Safe Routes to School points from 5 to 10.
And I'm just trying to remember why. I think I remember, Austin. I think the reason we did that is in our Safe Streets for All plan, we had a lot of policy suggestions, ways that we could make safety a more central component of our funding. And one of the recommendations from that was to put more money to, or make it easier for Safe Routes to School projects to be funded. And this was the simple way to do it, by just giving a few extra, basically doubling the points. So I think that's kind of why that came about. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense. So I think I asked the question last year to someone, I think it was someone on the Cuyahoga Falls School Board. And I don't think that Cuyahoga Falls School District has a Safe Routes to School plan.
I think you're right.
Do you or anyone else on the AMATS team know, like, what if let's say a citizen like myself wanted to encourage the school district to create such a plan, what would be the best way to approach that? Any thoughts? Or is it usually just driven from the school district itself?
No, a lot of times it is driven by citizens, I think. I'm thinking that you probably would want to have a conversation with the right either elected officials or some of the like senior staff, and kind of bend their ear on what you perceive as the benefits of them doing that. It also might be worthwhile to kind of talk to some of your school board members. You know, there's work involved with putting something like that together, not having done it myself, I'm only hearing the second hand, but I don't think it's really difficult to put something together. But then you have certain benefits of being able to go after, by having a Safe Routes to School plan, you can go after Safe Routes to School funding. So it's kind of a generic recommendation, but my recommendation would be engage the leaders of Cuyahoga Falls that you know best, or that you think could be open to listening to something about like the benefits of that program. Okay. And I don't know enough about the political landscape to, you know, go further. I know, you know, a lot of the folks in your community, but.
Sure. Yeah. And do you know, are those plans usually developed by like the cities themselves, or is it the school district, or.
Jeff or Heather, do you know? I think it's kind of like, I think both are pretty heavily involved, right? Do either of you know at all?
No. I don't know.
I'm not interject? Very familiar, but I do. Oh, if you know, go ahead.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to suggest, Austin, we can have a sidebar about this, but
sure.
Greg Hannon, City of Hudson, I think he was instrumental in helping. I don't know if he was involved with helping get the Hudson program going, but I know when he did Leadership Hudson, his team that year, the group that went through Leadership Hudson, was responsible for doing a lot of the cycling around Hudson, safe routes in Hudson. May be worthwhile to go to somebody like Greg and say, hey, do you have any of that information, or who, and how did you get this going in Hudson, and sort of see if we can leverage that knowledge to Cuyahoga Falls?
Okay. Yeah. We'll chat about that later, Bill.
I've got
Greg's contact information.
That's a great idea. And I could probably ask around a little bit and maybe give you some other folks to talk to that have gone through this in other communities, if that would be helpful. But I think you're hitting on, Bill, like what we've heard so often. It's like one or two people that are in a position to like have influence, that have the passion behind it, and that's how it gets developed. It's really, you have like one person or a group led by one person that is instrumental in like making things happen. But I can talk with a couple other people on staff that would know a little more about this than I do, but we could also give you some other folks maybe to talk to. We're not as involved in that, realm as.
Sorry.
What's that?
I was just going to suggest the ODOT Safe Routes to School website has a lot of good information.
Yeah, that's right.
I know it's better when you hear from our experience, but unfortunately we don't have it. So that would be my first suggestion.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
Thank you.
I know Phyllis on our staff, who does a lot of stuff with bicycle and pedestrian planning. She has helped, like when the city of Akron put together, this is a long time ago, like 2012 or 2015 or something, when they put together a safe routes to school plan, she assisted with that to some degree. So I can like talk with her and kind of see if she has other ideas. But no, that's a great idea, Heather, the ODOT resources.
Okay, yeah, thank you for all the information. Sure. I did have one additional question about the carbon reduction grants. In the scoring, you said that existing projects are prioritized. And is that showing up in the scoring in the project delivery category? Or like, how are you emphasizing existing projects?
Yeah, I believe that's just looking at this, you're not going to have anything that's completely unprogrammed. If something doesn't already have funding through our agency, there's no way it's going to happen before fiscal year 26. The project delivery is basically that's your way of emphasizing, you know, existing projects.
And one other question is, do trail projects, I guess like an off-road trail, does that count as a bicycle pedestrian improvement?
I don't remember. Here it just says bicycle pedestrian improvements, so I would have to see if that's further defined in the guidelines themselves. I would think I don't want to say this for sure, but I would think that it includes trails, not necessarily like an off-road hiking trail, but like a trail, like a bike trail or a shared use path alongside a road, as well as sidewalks and other pedestrian and bicycle improvements that we would typically fund through TASA. I would think that's what that means, but I don't know that for sure.
I have a comment about the bicycle program. Thinking back in my memory about 5 BC, that would be before COVID, I remember when the Safe Streets to School first came up to AMATS, and we talked about other cities that had marked roads, so drivers knew they were not to use those as a regular thoroughfare. They were to turn left, right, use a side street, get off of that marked street. So it would be a school street for pedestrians and I guess bicyclists. I think they painted the street green. But for Cuyahoga Falls, I am a Falls member, citizen. I would say you'd have to talk to the school board, not the school staff, because they're busy right now getting ready for school, but to talk to the school board, raise the issue. You're definitely going to need to talk with the city. I mean, we're talking police department here, roads, street department, if you want to paint or mark a street to make it a safe street to school. And then, of course, you have the education of the people in the falls that are going to be using those roads, whether you put it in a paper or a Facebook or the school Facebook, however you want to spread the word around, including signs. We have enough signs in Chicago Falls say no parking on this side of the street. So there's money there for signs from the city. It doesn't have to involve the schools. Thank you.
Bill, I noticed your comments in the chat. Did you want to talk about those? You were asking about high crash sites and intersections. They don't have points. You were wondering why that is.
We'll go ahead and read the first comment. I don't have it here.
Why does high crash sites / intersections not have points? So on that,
yeah, under the safety, yeah.
So here, I'm going to try to back up to our STBG so we can look at this together. Is this what you were talking about?
Well, I'm thinking about that because Talmadge Circle is or has been the high crash site in Summit County.
Yeah, so exactly. So
my next comment was you belong to a road and you have a flashing stop sign with LEDs around it. I don't know how cheap those are or how expensive. Could you put those on the, what are they, 8 roads leading into Talmadge Circle that you could say, slow down, high crash intersection ahead, something cheap that would get people's ideas.
Yeah, something like that would typically
slow down.
Yeah, something like that would typically be municipally led. That wouldn't be something that, I guess I shouldn't totally say that. If, let's say, AMATS was involved in a large project that was doing like a full reconstruction of the Talmadge Circle and its approaching streets, then like absolutely an element like that could be put in. But as a standalone thing, that would just be something that the city would decide to do. You know, think of it as kind of one of those quick hit kinds of things or low hanging fruit, like a relatively low cost, but potentially high impact thing. That you're not gonna go through like the federal funding process for on its own. But you certainly could as part of a larger project. But as far as your question, and if this is what you were asking, and tell me if I'm wrong here, but you're kind of wondering, like on the bottom there, high crash location listed on AMAT's traffic crash report only receives 15 points, whereas the maximum's 25. Is that kind of what you were wondering about?
Yeah, the fact that Talmadge Circle affects the county residents.
Yeah.
Granted, Talmadge City would have to put in under roadway, this is a high crash location, we want to put in flashing lights, and they would get 20 points because you AMATS have said this is a high crash site. Everybody knows it's a high crash site. So it would be sort of like, okay, Talmadge, go ahead and put in for it and you'll get 20 points and we'll see where we can get the money for it.
Yeah, well, it would receive 15 points. Because if you look on the bottom, the high crash location, or if it's just something listed on the traffic crash report, it would receive 15. The reason it's not the full points is, and Talmadge Circle is the best illustration of this in our whole region. If you look, like you said, it is absolutely our number one crash site. We have so many crashes there. However, the rate of fatal or serious injury crashes is minuscule. It's a tiny fraction of that total. And the Safe Streets for All plan that we did aligns with the federal approach, where, you know, federal and state approach, everything has been moving toward focusing on eliminating or reducing those most serious crashes. And I don't want to go as far as to say we don't care about fender benders or moderate crashes where no one gets hurt, because that's definitely not true. But there's way more of a focus on looking at sites where we have the bad crashes, where people are getting seriously hurt or killed. And that's why so our high injury network, which was part of the Safe Streets for All plan, that high injury network lays out where those locations are. And that's why those receive the maximum points. That doesn't mean that doing something on Talmadge Circle like isn't a worthy project in terms of safety, or that it shouldn't be, they shouldn't go for funding if they have a good idea. It just means that all else being equal, we're going to be more focused on the fatal and serious injury crashes. Does that make sense? Okay. Any other questions about our funding policy guidelines? Okay. So the second thing on our agenda, and I definitely don't want to bore you with the details. We typically don't have things like amendments to our TIP on the agenda. Really, the only reason this is on the agenda is one of the amendments we're doing, we're actually putting this new carbon reduction funding into a project in the city of Kent. It's a pretty large project, the East Main Street project in front of Kent State University. But by doing that, the reason it's on the agenda is to kind of talk about, that's $3.6 million that now we're going to be able to put back into our STBG program, because currently there's money from STBG in that project. Since we're now using the CRP funding, that kind of goes back into the kitty, and that can go toward other projects. So really, that's the only thing noteworthy there. Other than that, we're removing funding from one project and shifting funding into a different fiscal year, which are just kind of rather mundane things that get done fairly regularly. So I assume there aren't any questions about that, but if there are, I'm happy to entertain them. Okay, and the final thing on my agenda, some of you are aware that AMATS has been involved in the past with several bike and brainstorm events. We do have one planned. It'll be our first one in a little bit over a year. We're going to be having a ride in the Middlebury neighborhood of the city of Akron on Saturday, September 23rd. That ride will start at 10:30 a.m. It's going to be at The Well, also where Compass Coffee is, if you know where that is on East Market Street. Part of the reason, there are a couple of reasons why this location was chosen. So one, we had some pretty involved partners that seemed interested in doing something there. So we always like to get that buy-in from the community. That's like the most key thing to having a successful event. But the other reason is between East Market Street, Arlington Street, East Exchange Street, and the upcoming Rubber City Heritage Trail, which is just starting to be built. And then there are a bunch of other phases that are going to be built in future years, as well as the Freedom Trail that was built recently and extended through Middlebury. There's a lot going on in that neighborhood, either that has been built recently or that is planned to be built in the next few years. So we thought that would be a great location to kind of assess how do people in those neighborhoods kind of interact with the amenities that they do have, like whether they're new bike lanes or the trails or whatever. What are the pinch points? What are the things that are still difficult for the average cyclist? Just seemed like a good a good place to do a bike and brainstorm. So I just wanted to let everybody know that that'll be coming up. We'll be certainly sending out a lot more information about this as it gets closer. I know Heather's, once all the promotional materials are developed, like Heather's going to put stuff on our website, the Switching Gears website. She's going to tweet things through social media and everything. So there'll be stuff coming out about this, but just wanted to mention that. Any questions on that? Okay, well, that's all I had for the agenda. But as always, if there are any issues or projects or things that you want to talk about related to transportation, by all means.
Actually, could I jump in real quick, Austin? So sorry. Hold that thought, Austin. I just wanted to point out, and I believe I mentioned it at the last CIC meeting that we had, but we have a commuter challenge coming up in September. It's September 11th through 24th. It's through our GoHio Commute website. It's a statewide challenge. So anytime you go onto that site and you log a trip, be it bus, bike, walking, carpooling, vanpool, scooter, any of those, every time you log a trip, you get an entry into the drawing for grand prizes prizes. So the first people to log a commute for any of those six modes will get a $25 gift card. And then the grand prize is a $200 gift card. Second prize is $200, $100, and then $50. So it's an opportunity to go and try a different type of commute and just check out our website, GoHio Commute. So there's my plug, Austin. I am so sorry. Go ahead.
No, thanks for that announcement. Definitely appreciate that. I just wanted to, in preparation for the upcoming funding cycle, I wanted to share some activities that Task Force, we've been advocating with the City of Cuyahoga Falls and the Village of Silver Lake to pursue TASA funding for the Veterans Trail. So it would be the next 1.1 miles south from the section that's been funded. So that would be from the pedestrian bridge right across from Roberts Middle School over into Silver Lake. And then it would follow the border of Silver Lake down to, it would cross Front Street. And I think that's Bailey Road there, and then connect to Riverfront Park, which would make a perfect trailhead, and the pedestrian bridge that crosses the Cuyahoga River there. So there's a number of benefits. It actually connects with the two new metro lines along Front Street and Bailey Road. I think it's the 31 and 32 routes. So there's a multimodal connection there, and connecting to the previously funded section of the Veterans Trail and two pedestrian bridges, we think it could really be a great project for TASA funding. So I just wanted to share that. We've engaged both the Village of Silver Lake. I know Bill has been in contact a lot with Mayor Hovey. And he's trying to get some input from the residents. I think there's 30 residences along that right of way, and that right of way would be right behind their backyards. So he's kind of collecting and getting input from the community there. And then we've also shared the idea with this the City of Cuyahoga Falls as well.
Does so we the don't line yet. Go? Sorry to interrupt, Austin. Keep going.
No,
I was just going to ask. The rail line, that would be like behind Vincent Street, like basically right up against Route 8 through Silver Lake?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Yeah. And then is the other question I had is, that makes all the sense in the world, especially connected into downtown Cuyahoga Falls. What about when you get to Front Street, to Route 59, like what? Would it just be an at-grade crossing, but at a signalized kind of thing, or what?
Yes.
So I think there's a number of options. I think if we, I checked the 2005 plan, And I think they just had people going along Bailey Road, crossing Front Street and then crossing Bailey Road. And then, you know, widening the sidewalk there over to Riverfront Park. That was the recommendation in the plan 20 years ago. Bill had an idea that he shared with me recently. I don't know, Bill, do you want to mention that?
Yeah, I was out in Phoenix visiting my son back at the beginning of July, and we happened to be going down the road, and I saw these signals. And the road is very similar to Front Street, very, very busy, wide road. And I said, that looks like a trail going across. So I got out of the car and investigated and took some pictures, which I'm going to share with our team. But yeah, they basically, Matt, put a, you know, signalized crossing. And it's very, very well done the way the city of Phoenix did that. They got a great trail system out there.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I know it can be done. I know, you know, I've seen, I'm thinking like in, my brother used to live in Colorado, and I remember seeing some pretty creative ways of dealing with those, you know, monster five-lane roads with 20,000 plus vehicles per day. I know it can be done. So I was just curious if you guys had thoughts, but it sounds like you're kind of considering a few different ideas, which is great. Right. So, yeah. But yeah, no, great to hear. I think that would be, I mean, talk about a huge thing, especially for Cuyahoga Falls. That's awesome.
Yeah. You know that there's been some, there has been some feedback. I met with Mayor Hovey for a second time last Friday, and he had received about 10 of the 30 houses had gotten back to him. Oh. So there were some people with some concerns. There were some people that were like, gung ho, let's do this. And his next plan was to have a town hall meeting with the residents. So
good. Yeah, sounds like he's approaching it proactively, which I always think works better in right-of-way situations like that. I've seen it both ways, but I think that's the way to do it. Just kind of be out in the open from the beginning and try to get rid of, or try to work through some of those fears that people have about a trail in their backyard. So, yeah.
Yeah, another benefit of that section is it would further minimize the number of roads that users of the Summit Bike and Hike Trail would have to take through Silver Lake.
Right.
So we see that as another benefit.
Because that can get a little confusing through there for people that don't know the area well.
Right.
And then I think the stuff to the north that, you know, through Stowe that you've worked with Jim McCleary on, like that where it goes through Heather Hills and everything, like that would kind of eliminate those, all those twists and turns through there.
So, exactly.
Nice. Yeah. Great.
So we just wanted to be open about our activities in the background, and we're hoping you'll see an application submitted for that section by those two communities.
Great.
Deadline. By October 31st.
Sounds good. Are there any other questions or comments about anything? Okay. Well, thank you all for your time. Definitely appreciate you taking time out of your evening for a citizens involvement committee meeting, but always good to talk with you, and hopefully we'll see you next time.
Thank you, Matt.
All right. Yes, thanks everybody. A lot, guys.
Bye. Thank you all.
Bye.
Bye.